Epilogue. Informationalism and the Network Society. Manuel Castells. Technology is a fundamental dimension of social change. Societies evolve and transform themselves through a complex interaction of cultural, economic, political, and technological factors. So technology has to be understood within this multidimensional matrix. Yet technology has its own dynamics. The kind of technology that develops and diffuses in a given society decisively shapes its material structure. Technological systems evolve gradually until a major qualitative change occurs, a technological revolution ushering in a new technological paradigm. The notion of paradigm was proposed by the leading historian of science, Thomas Kuhn, to explain the transformation of knowledge by scientific revolutions. A paradigm is a conceptual pattern that sets the standards for performance. It integrates discoveries into a coherent system of relationships characterized by its synergy, that is, by the added value of the system vis-à-vis its individual components. A technological paradigm organizes the available range of technologies around a nucleus that enhances the performance of each one of them. By technology, it is usually understood as the use of scientific knowledge to set procedures for performance in a reproducible form. Thus, the Industrial Revolution constituted industrialism, a paradigm characterized by the capacity to generate and distribute energy by human-made artifacts, without depending on the natural environment. Because energy is a primary resource for all kinds of activities, humankind was able, by transforming energy generation, to increase dramatically its power over nature and over the conditions of its own existence. Around the nucleus of a technological revolution cluster and converge technologies in various fields. The revolution in the technology of energy, first with steam power, then later with electricity, laid down the foundations of industrialism. Associated revolutions in mechanical engineering, metallurgy, chemistry, biology, medicine, transportation, and a wide variety of other technological fields came together in the constitution of the new technological paradigm. This technological infrastructure made possible the emergence of new forms of production, consumption, and social organization that together formed the industrial society. Central features of the industrial society were the industrial factory, the large corporation, the rationalized bureaucracy, the gradual phasing out of agricultural labor, the process of large-scale urbanization, the formation of centralized systems for delivery of public services, the rise of mass media communication, the construction of national and international transportation systems, and the development of weapons of mass destruction. Industrialism appeared in a variety of cultural and institutional expressions. Industrial capitalism and industrial statism were antagonistic forms of social organization, yet they shared fundamental similarities in their material foundations. History, culture, institutions, and evolving patterns of political domination created a diverse array of industrial societies, as different as Japan and the United States, Sweden and Spain. Yet these were historical variations of a common socio-technological species, industrialism. This analogy may help explain the meaning and importance of informationalism as a technological paradigm, which is currently replacing industrialism as the dominant matrix of 21st century societies. To be sure, industrialism does not disappear in one day or in a few years. The process of historical transition proceeds by absorption of preceding social forms by the new emerging ones, so that real societies are considerably messier than the ideal types we construct for heuristic purposes. How do we know a given paradigm, for example, informationalism, is dominant vis-à-vis others, for example, industrialism? It's simple. Because of its superior performance in the accumulation of wealth and power. Historical transitions are shaped by the world of winners, This should imply no value judgment. We do not really know if producing more or more efficiently embodies superior value in terms of humanity. The idea of progress is an ideology. How good, bad, or indifferent a new paradigm is depends on whose perspective, on whose values, on whose standards. But we know it is dominant because when implemented, it erases competition by elimination. In this sense, informationalism is the dominant paradigm of our societies, replacing and subsuming industrialism. But what is it? Informationalism is a technological paradigm. It refers to technology, not to social organization, and not to institutions. Informationalism provides the basis for a certain type of social structure that I name the network society. Without informationalism, the network society could not exist, yet this new social structure is not produced by informationalism, but by a broader pattern of social evolution. I will elaborate below on the structure, genesis, and historical diversity of the network society. But let me first focus on its material infrastructure, informationalism as a technological paradigm. What is characteristic of informationalism is not the central role of knowledge and information in the generation of wealth, power, and meaning. Knowledge and information have been central in many, if not all, historically known societies. There were certainly different forms of knowledge in many instances, but knowledge, including scientific knowledge, is always historically relative. What is accepted as truth today may be catalogued as error tomorrow. To be sure, in the last two centuries, there has been a closer interaction than in the past between science, technology, wealth, power, and communication. But the Roman Empire cannot be understood without the technology of engineering of vast public works and communication patterns, without the logical codification of government and economic activities in the Roman law, and without the processing of information and communication made possible by a developed Latin language. Throughout history, knowledge and information and their technological underpinnings have been closely associated with political military domination, economic prosperity, and cultural hegemony. So, in a sense, all economies are knowledge-based economies and all societies are, at their core, information societies. What is distinctive in our historical period is a new technological paradigm ushered in by the information technology revolution, centered around a cluster of information technologies. What is new is the technology of information processing and the impact of this technology on the generation and application of knowledge. This is why I do not use the notions of knowledge economy or information society, but the concept of informationalism, a technological paradigm based on the augmentation of the human capacity in information processing around the twin revolutions in microelectronics and genetic engineering. However, what is revolutionary in these technologies vis-a-vis previous information technology revolutions in history, such as the invention of the printing press? Printing was indeed a major technological discovery with considerable consequences in all domains of society, although it induced much greater changes in the European context in the early modern age than in the Chinese context, where it was invented much earlier. But the new information technologies of our time have an even higher historical relevance because they ushered in a new technological paradigm on the basis of three major distinctive features. 1. Their self-expanding processing capacity in terms of volume, complexity, and speed. 2. Their recombining ability, and 3. Their distributional flexibility. I will now elaborate on these features, which constitute the essence of the new informational paradigm. I will do it separately for the two fundamental technological fields, microelectronics and genetic engineering, before considering their interaction. The microelectronics-based revolution includes the microchip, computers, telecommunications, and their networking. Software development is the critical technology to operate the whole system, but integrated circuits hold the processing power in their design. These technologies allow for an extraordinary increase in the capacity to process information, not only in the volume of information, but in the complexity of the operations and in the speed of the processing. However, how much is much more compared with previous information processing technologies? How do we know that there is a revolution characterized by an unprecedented leap forward in processing capacity? A first layer of the answer is purely empirical. Take any of the available measures of information processing in terms of bits, feedback loops, and speed, and the last 30 years have seen a sustained exponential increase in processing power, coupled with an equally dramatic decrease in cost per operation. But I venture the hypothesis that there is something else, not only quantitative, but qualitative. The capacity of these technologies to self-expand their processing power because of the feedback on technological development of the knowledge generated on the basis of the technology. This is a risky hypothesis because processing power may find physical limits for further integration of circuits in the microchip. However, until now, every doomsday prediction in this domain has been belied by new manufacturing breakthroughs. Ongoing research on new materials, including biological materials and chemically based information processing on their DNA, may extend extraordinarily the level of integration. Parallel processing and the growing integration of software into hardware through nanotechnology may be additional sources of self-expanding power of information processing. So, a more formal version of this hypothesis is the following. In the first 25 years of the information technology revolution, we have observed a self-generated, expansive capacity of technologies to process information. Current limits are likely to be superseded by new waves of innovation in the making, and, this is critical, when and if limits of processing power on the basis of these technologies are reached, a new technological paradigm will emerge. Under forms and with technologies that we cannot imagine today, except in the science fiction scenarios of the usual futurology suspects. Microelectronics-based technologies are also characterized by their abilities to recombine information in any possible way. This is what I call the hypertext, following the tradition from Nelson to Berners-Lee, and people call the World Wide Web. The real value of the Internet is its ability to link up everything from everywhere and to recombine it. This will be even more explicit when the original design of Berners-Lee's World Wide Web is restored in its two functions, as a browser and as an editor, instead of its current limited uses as a browser information provider connected to an email system. While Nelson's Xanadu was clearly a visionary utopia, the real potential of the Internet, as Nelson saw it, is in the recombining of all existing information and communication on the basis of specific purposes decided in real time by each user-producer of the hypertext. Recombination is the source of innovation, particularly if the products of this recombination become themselves supports for further interaction in a spiral of increasingly meaningful information. While the generation of new knowledge will always require the application of theory to recombine information, the ability to experiment with this recombining from a multiplicity of sources considerably extends the realm of knowledge, as well as the connections that can be made between different fields. Precisely the source of knowledge innovation in Kuhn's theory of scientific revolutions. The third feature of new information technologies is their flexibility in allowing the distribution of processing power in various contexts and applications. The explosion of networking technologies, like the Java and Genie languages in the 1990s, the staggering growth of cellular telephony, and the forthcoming full-fledged development of the mobile Internet, that is, cell phone-based access to the Internet from a wide array of portable appliances, are key developments that point to the growing capacity to have processing power, including the power of network communication, anywhere. Anywhere with the technological infrastructure and the knowledge to use it. I will elaborate more succinctly on the second component of the information technology revolution, genetic engineering. While it is often considered a process entirely independent from microelectronics, it is not. First, analytically, these technologies are obviously information technologies, since they are focused on the decoding and eventual reprogramming of DNA, the information code of living matter. Second, there is a much closer relationship between microelectronics and genetic engineering than people seem to realize. Without massive computing power and the simulation capacity provided by advanced software, the Human Genome Project would not have been completed, nor would scientists be able to identify specific functions and the locations of specific genes. On the other hand, biochips and chemically based microchips are no longer science fiction fantasies. Third, there is theoretical convergence between the two technological fields around the analytical paradigm based on networking, self-organization, and emergent properties, as shown in the revolutionary theoretical work of Fritjof Capra. Genetic engineering technologies, the transformative powers of which are just being unleashed in the early 21st century, are also characterized by their self-expanding processing capacity, by their recombining ability, and by their distributing power. First, the existence of a map of the human genome, and, increasingly, of genetic maps of a number of species and subspecies, creates the possibility of connecting knowledge about biological process in a cumulative way, leading to a qualitative transformation of our understanding of processes that have been beyond the realm of observation. Second, the recombining ability concerning DNA codes is exactly what genetic engineering is about, and what sets it apart from any previous biological experimentation. But there is a more subtle innovation. The first generation of genetic engineering largely failed because cells were reprogrammed as isolated entities, without understanding that context is everything, in biology as in information processing in general. Cells exist only in their relationships to others. So, interacting networks of cells, communicating by their codes rather than by isolated instructions, are the objects of scientific recombination strategies. This kind of recombination is far too complex to be identified in linear terms. It requires simulation techniques with massive computer parallel processing, so that emergent properties are associated with networks of genes, as in some of the models proposed by researchers at the Santa Fe Institute. Third, the promise of genetic engineering is precisely its ability to reprogram different codes and their protocols of communication in different areas of different bodies or systems of different species. Transgenic research and self-regenerative processes in living organisms are the frontier of genetic engineering. Genetic drugs are intended to induce capabilities of self-programming by living organisms, the ultimate expression of distributed information processing power. Incidentally, genetic engineering shows vividly how mistaken we would be to assign positive value to extraordinary technological revolutions independently of their social context, social uses, and social outcomes. I cannot imagine a more fundamental technological revolution than the capacity to manipulate the codes of living organisms. Neither can I think of a more dangerous and potentially destructive technology if it becomes decoupled from our collective capacity to control technological development in cultural, ethical, and institutional terms. On the foundations of informationalism, the network society emerges and expands throughout the planet as the dominant form of social organization in our time. The network society is a social structure made of information networks powered by the information technologies characteristic of the informationalist paradigm. By social structure, I mean the organizational arrangements of humans in relationships of production, consumption, experience, and power, as expressed in meaningful interaction framed by culture. A network is a set of interconnected nodes. A node is the point where the curve cuts itself. Social networks are as old as humankind, but they have taken on a new life under informationalism because new technologies enhance the flexibility inherent in networks while solving the coordination and steering problems that impeded networks throughout history in their competition with hierarchical organizations. Networks distribute performance and share decision-making along the nodes of the network in an interactive pattern. By definition, a network has no center, just nodes. While nodes may be of different sizes, thus of varying relevance, they are all necessary to the network. When nodes become redundant, networks tend to reconfigure themselves, deleting nodes and adding new productive ones. Nodes increase their importance for the network by absorbing more information and processing it more efficiently. The relative importance of a node does not stem from its specific features, but from its ability to contribute valuable information to the network. In this sense, the main nodes are not centers, but switches and protocols of communication, following a networking logic rather than a command logic in their performance. Networks work on a binary logic: inclusion, exclusion. As social forms, they are value-free. They can equally kiss or kill, nothing personal. It all depends on the goals of a given network and on its most elegant, economical, and self-reproductive form to perform these goals. In this sense, the network is an automaton. In a social structure, social actors and institutions program the networks. But once programmed, information networks, powered by information technology, impose their structural logic on their human components. That is, until their program is changed, usually at a high social and economic cost. To apply this formal analysis to the actual workings of society, I will briefly characterize the fundamental structures of this network society. First of all, the new economy is built on networks. Global financial markets, at the source of investment and valuation, are built on electronic networks processing signals. Some of these signals are based on economic calculations, but often they are generated by information turbulences from different sources. The outcomes of these signals, and of their processing in the electronic networks of financial markets, are the actual values assigned to every asset in every economy. The global economy is built around collaborative networks of production and management, as multinational corporations and their ancillary networks account for more than 30% of GGP, gross global product, and about 70% of international trade. Firms themselves work in and by networks. Large firms are decentralized in internal networks. Small and medium firms form networks of cooperation, thus maintaining their flexibility while pulling resources together. Large firms work on the basis of strategic alliances that vary in products, processes, markets, or periods of time in a variable geometry of corporate networks. And these corporate networks link up with small and medium business networks in a world of networks inside networks. Furthermore, what I call the network enterprise often links up customers and suppliers through a proprietary network, as in the business models spearheaded by Cisco Systems or Dell Computer in the electronics industry. The actual operational unit in our economies is the business project, operated by ad hoc business networks. All this complexity can be managed only by the tools of informationalism. Productivity and competitiveness are vastly enhanced by this networked form of production, distribution, and management. Because networks of the new economy expand throughout the world, phasing out by competition less efficient forms of organization, the new networked economy becomes the dominant economy everywhere. economic units, territories, and people that do not perform well in this economy, or that do not present a potential interest for these dominant networks, are discarded. On the other hand, any source of potential value, from anywhere and from anything, is connected and programmed into the productive networks of the new economy. Under such conditions, work is individualized. Management-labor relationships are defined in individual arrangements, and work is valued depending on the capacity of workers or managers to reprogram themselves to perform new tasks and new goals, as the system is driven by technological innovation and entrepreneurial versatility. Not everything is bad in this new working arrangement. It is a world of winners and losers, but more often than not, of uncertain winners and losers who have no return to the network. It is also a world of creativity as well as of destruction. A world characterized simultaneously by creative destruction and destructive creation. Cultural expression becomes patterned around the kaleidoscope of a global electronic hypertext. Around the internet and multimedia, manifestations of human communication and creation are hyperlinked. The flexibility of this media system facilitates the absorption of the most diverse expressions and the customization of the delivery of messages. While individual experiences may exist outside the hypertext, collective experiences and shared messages, that is, culture as a social medium, are by and large captured in this hypertext. It constitutes the source of real virtuality as the semantic framework of our lives. Virtual because it is based on electronic circuits and ephemeral audiovisual messages. Real because this is our reality, since the global hypertext provides most of the sounds, images, words, shapes, and connotations that we use in the construction of our meanings in all domains of experience. Politics is itself increasingly enclosed in the media world, either by adapting to its codes and rules or by attempting to change the rules of the game by creating and imposing new cultural codes. In both cases, politics becomes an application of the hypertext, since the text simply reconfigures itself to the new codes. Yes, there is life beyond the network society. In the fundamentalist cultural communes that reject dominant values and build autonomously the sources of their own meaning, sometimes around self-constructed alternative utopias, more often around the transcendent truths of God, nation, family, ethnicity, and territoriality. Thus, the planet is not subsumed entirely by the network society, as the industrial society never extended to the totality of humankind. Yet the networking logic of instrumentality has already linked up dominant segments of societies in most areas of the world around the structural logic embodied in the new global networked economy, in the flexible forms of individualized work, and in the culture of real virtuality inscripted in the electronic hypertext. The networking logic, rooted in informationalism, has also transformed our practice of space and time. The space of flows, characteristic of the network society, links up distant locales around shared functions and meanings on the basis of electronic circuits and fast transportation corridors, while isolating and subduing the logic of experience embodied in the space of places. A new form of time, which I call timeless time, emerges out of systemic trends to compress chronological time to its smallest possible expression, as in split-second financial transactions, as well as to blur time sequences, as can be observed in the twisting of professional career patterns away from the predictable progression of the organization man, now replaced by the flexible woman. Taken into this whirlwind and bypassed by global networks of capital, technology, and information, nation-states do not sink as the prophets of globalization predicted. They adapt in structure and performance, becoming networks themselves. On the one hand, they built supranational and international institutions of shared governance, some of them highly integrated, as the European Union, others much looser, such as NATO or NAFTA. Still others asymmetrical in their obligations, as the International Monetary Fund, imposing the logic of global markets on developing economies. Yet in all cases, political sovereignty becomes shared among various governments and organizations. On the other hand, in most of the world, a process of political decentralization is taking place, shifting resources from national governments to regional and local governments, and even to non-governmental organizations, in a concerted effort to rebuild legitimacy and increase flexibility in the conduct of public affairs. These simultaneous trends towards supranationality and towards locality induce a new form of state, the network state, that appears to be the most resilient institutional form to weather the storms of the network society. Where did this network society come from? What was its historical genesis? It emerged from the accidental coincidence of three independent phenomena in the last quarter of the 20th century. The first was the information technology revolution, the key components of which came together as a new technological paradigm in the 1970s. Remember, ARPANET, 1969, Usenet News, 1979, the invention of the integrated circuit, 1971, the personal computer, 1974 to 1976, the software revolution, Unix codes designed in the late 60s, released in 1974, TCP/IP protocols designed in 1973 to 1978, recombinant DNA, 1973. The second trend was the process of socioeconomic restructuring of the two competing systems, capitalism and statism, which faced major crises resulting from their internal contradictions in 1973 to 1975, capitalism, and 1975 to 1980, statism. They both addressed their crises with new government policies and new corporate strategies. The capitalist perestroika worked. The restructuring of statism failed because of the inherent limits of statism to internalize and use the information technology revolution, as I have argued in my study with Emma Kiselyova of the collapse of the Soviet Union. Capitalism was able to overcome its structural trend toward destructive rampant inflation through informational productivity, deregulation, liberalization, privatization, globalization, and networking, providing the economic foundations of the network society. The third trend at the origins of this new society was cultural and political, and refers to the values projected by the social movements of the late 1960s and early 1970s in Europe and in America, with some sui generis manifestations in Japan and China. These movements were fundamentally libertarian, although the feminist movement and the environmental movement extended the notion of freedom to a fundamental challenge to the institutions and ideologies of patriarchalism and productivism. These movements were cultural because they did not focus on the seizing of state power, unlike most of their predecessors in the century, or on redistributing of wealth. Instead, they acted on the categories of experience and rejected established institutions, calling for new meanings of life and, consequently, for the redrawing of the social contracts between the individual and the state, and between the individual and the corporate world. These three phenomena emerged independently from one another. Their historical coincidence was serendipitous, and so was their specific combination in given societies. This is why the speed and shape of the process of transition to the network society is different in the United States, Western Europe, and the rest of the world. The more entrenched the institutions and rules of the industrial society, or of pre-industrial societies, the slower and more difficult the process of transformation is. There is no value judgment implied in this differential path toward the network society. The network society is not the promised land of the information age. It is simply a new, specific social structure whose effects for the well-being of humankind are undetermined. It all depends on context and process. One of the key components of this historical accident that produced our 21st century world was the new technological paradigm, informationalism. What was its genesis? War, hot and cold, was an essential ingredient of technological innovation, as has been the case throughout history. World War II was the matrix of most of the discoveries that led to the information technology revolution, and the Cold War was the crucible for their development. Yes, the Internet's ancestor, ARPANET, was not truly a military technology, even if its key technologies, packet switching and distributed networking power, were developed by Paul Baran at RAND Corporation as part of a proposal to the Department of Defense to build a communication system able to survive nuclear war. But the proposal was never approved, and the DOD-based scientists designing ARPANET knew of Baran's work only after they were already building the computer network. However, without the support in resources and freedom of innovation provided by the Advanced Research Projects Agency at the Pentagon, computer science in the United States would not have developed at the pace it did. ARPANET would not have been built, and computer networking would be very different today. Similarly, while the microelectronics revolution has been largely independent of military applications for the last 20 years, in the critical formative period of the 1950s and early 1960s, Silicon Valley and the other major technological centers were highly dependent on military markets and their generous research funding. Research universities were also essential seedbeds of the technological revolution. In fact, it can be argued that academic computer scientists captured the resources of the Department of Defense to develop computer science in general, and computing networking in particular, for the sake of scientific discovery and technological innovation, without much direct military application. Actual military design was done under conditions of extreme security in the national laboratories, and there has been very little innovation spun from these laboratories, in spite of their extraordinary scientific potential. They were the mirror of the Soviet system, and so was their fate. They became monumental tombs of ingenuity. Universities and research centers of major hospitals and public health centers were the crucial sources of the biology revolution. Francis Crick and James Watson worked out of Cambridge University in 1953, and the key research leading to the recombinant DNA took place between 1973 and 1975 around Stanford University and the University of California at San Francisco. Business did play a role, but not so established corporations. AT&T exchanged its proprietary rights to microelectronics for a telecommunications monopoly in the 1950s, and later passed up the opportunity to operate ARPANET in the 1970s. IBM did not foresee the PC revolution and jumped onto the bandwagon only later, under such confused conditions that it licensed its operating system to Microsoft and left the door open for the PC clones that would end up pushing itself to survive mainly as a services company. And as soon as Microsoft became a quasi-monopoly, it made similar blunders. It failed to see the Internet's potential until 1995, when it introduced its Internet Explorer, a browser that was not originally created by Microsoft, but based on the reworking of a browser designed by Spyglass, a company that licensed Mosaic software from the National Center for Supercomputer Applications. Rank Xerox designed many of the key technologies of the PC age at its Park Research Unit in California. But it only half understood the wonders its researchers were doing, so much so that their work was largely commercialized by other companies, particularly by Apple Computer. So the business component at the source of informationalism was, by and large, a new breed of business, startups that quickly became giant corporations: Cisco Systems, Dell Computer, Oracle, Sun Microsystems, Apple, etc. Or corporations that reinvented themselves, such as Nokia, which shifted from consumer electronics to cellular telephony and then to the mobile internet. to be able to transit from their entrepreneurial origins to being innovation-driven large-scale organizations, these new businesses built on another fundamental component of informationalism: the cultural source of technological innovation represented by the hacker culture. There are no technological revolutions without cultural transformation. Revolutionary technologies have to be thought of. This is not an incremental process. It is a vision, an act of belief, a gesture of rebellion. To be sure, financing, manufacturing, and marketing will ultimately decide which technologies survive in the marketplace, but not necessarily which technologies develop, because the marketplace, as important as it is not the only place in the planet. Informationalism was partly invented and decisively shaped by a new culture that was essential in the development of computer networking, in the distribution of processing capacity, and in the augmentation of innovation potential by cooperation and sharing. The theoretical understanding of this culture and of its role as the source of innovation and creativity in informationalism is the cornerstone in our understanding of the genesis of the network society. In my own analysis, as well as in the contributions of other scholars, this essential dimension of informationalism has been touched upon but not really studied. This is why Pekka Himanen's theory of the hacker culture as the spirit of informationalism is a fundamental breakthrough in the discovery of the world unfolding in this uncertain dawn of the third millennium.